This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
As any entrepreneur knows, your business journey can feel like an uphill climb and you'll need to learn how to pace yourself to be successful. Today, we are speaking to Azran Osmanrani about his book, 30 Days in 30 Years, where he describes the sprint and marathon of achieving breakthrough performance. Now, if you know Azran Osmanrani, he's now with Naluri. You probably remember him from iFlix and AirAsia X. You've seen him running around the streets in KL and he's involved in Ironman and a triathlete. And in his book, his first book, he calls himself a curious challenger, a reformer, an adventurer. Very nice to be speaking to you, Azran. You know, I think I've spoken to you from your AirAsia X days, and of course, things have changed over the years. I wanted to first ask you, as I was reading the book, you were in the midst of writing this book. At the intro, you talked about you were writing this book, and then the accident happened. Okay, tell us about, I guess, the accident, and if that changed the storyline of this book.
Well, good morning, Frida.
Very deep, sorry.
That's all right. It's great. One of the great things was that I kept the introduction chapter for last. Mm-hmm. And of course, the accident, the positive that I took away from that was I had a lot more time lying in bed or lying around at home to complete the book in the last couple of months from there. And I think if there was one change, a subtle change in tone, I think I probably became more reflective and being more aware that there's a lot more that I don't know. Right? Oh. And so I hope what comes out of this book is less preachy, less telling, but more of, well, you know, I screwed up here. And I think this is kind of on reflection how I learned. Right. That's also how the lessons learned part came out. So at the end of every chapter, then I decided to have a 1 to 2 page summary with bullet points just to synthesize, because it causes you to reflect.
Okay, more Zen-like.
In a way, yeah. Yeah, and then I also added the couple of blank pages to encourage my readers to then write about how they think they could apply to themselves. So it's less about a passive reading experience, but something that hopefully they can then translate into, right, I'm going to do something different.
Okay, so, and how long did it take you to write this book then?
Okay, well, the first paragraph was January 1st, 2018.
Okay.
And by early September, the full draft was complete. Mm. And then, of course, it took a few months just to do editing because my grammar is atrocious. And of course, the whole layouts and all of that. But, you know, towards the end of the year, we got it done and sent it off to the printers.
I remember speaking to you the middle of last year. Are you coming up with a book? I was just asking, not knowing that you were actually coming up with a book. Now, this whole journey, before we get into all the lessons learned from your experience as a triathlete and all that, this whole journey, you said started in 2008.
Well, yeah. Okay. So before that, you know, when you work as a management consultant for over a decade and a few other opportunities, it's very stressful. Without realizing it, it gets to you. Mm-hmm. Because I used to be a competitive athlete in university, right? And then 10, 15 years of working 80 hours a week, traveling, crazy pressure, and the stress builds up, right? Overweight, hair loss, major stress and depression. And interestingly, AirAsia became the sponsor for the inaugural Borneo Marathon. And so, you know, in kind of the spirit of team building, I said, hey guys, let's do a 10K run, right? So I sort of brought the AirAsia team over and I thought, wow, 10K was a big deal. But at that event, what I saw was that grandmothers and grandfathers were completing the full 42-kilometer marathon, and they were crossing the finish line, sometimes more than 6 hours later, but with the biggest of smiles. And when I felt, wow, they had done more than four times what I just did, that's an amazing and an insane accomplishment. So
this was 2008.
That was 2008. Right?
So much has happened. Huh? I mean, really, in the last 10,
Absolutely.
11 years, right? I mean, for yourself,
right.
And I guess even if you've done all your triathlete, right. There's nothing like the first 10K.
Absolutely. Yeah. But see, here's the thing. You may have that initial catalyst that says, oh, I want to do something, right? And I thought, yes, I'm going to get my act together and start exercising regularly and watching my food. And the next race I'd sign up for was a 15K race just down here in Bukit Tunggu. And I collapsed at the end, and St. John's Ambulance had to come with me.
Okay.
So sometimes you may have the desire, but if you don't know what you're doing, that could also get you in trouble.
Okay.
And so that experience sometimes in the extreme causes you to say, okay, well, maybe there's a lot that I don't know and I need to get help and figure this one out.
Okay.
And I did. And that led me to running coaches and understanding that there's a process and method to running.
Okay. Right? So your book title, 30 Days and 30 Years.
Right.
What's the thinking there?
Sure. Well, the big overarching theme is from my own experience, right, when we try to build these businesses in a way that are attempting to challenge the status quo and these big incumbents, you have to move at a speed and agility that is at a completely different pace. And what struck me the most was this process of the fact that no plans ever came through, right? When you start a business and you invest so much time putting together a very beautiful business plan with 5 and 10 year cash flow projections and scenarios and all of these things. And, you know, maybe it's just me and I'm just incompetent, but every business and every year we did this at the board, everything fell apart in 1 to 2 months, right? Whether it was just a few months after launching AirAsiaX in November 2007, the global financial crisis of 2008 kicked in, you know, and then we had the global oil prices spiking to unprecedented levels and then crashing afterwards. We had volcanic eruptions in Iceland and Japan and Christchurch, all affecting us.
Just for you.
Just for me, you know. Changes in government policy and all of that. And even at iFlix, when I thought, okay, iFlix, surely no more oil prices and no more government regulations and all of that, right? But within a few months of launching the business, the entire business plan premise collapsed, right? And so it was about thinking on the feet and adapting. And so what I realized is that the standard 12-month planning time frame, right? We have annual plans and budgets, annual performance appraisals, you know, annual cycles. It causes us to tunnel vision. We spend so much time preparing for that, we get caught in that trap, right? We miss out on the peripheral events that are emerging. You don't see these new trends, right? Because you're so focused on this one column called variance to budget, right? Because all the conversation is get back on track, get back on plan, right? And that's a very insular perspective, right? As opposed to saying, you know what, let's say every 1 week or maybe at the most 30 days, right? Pausing and saying, hey, look, what's going on right, that we should continue?
Right.
What's not going right that we should stop? It's amazing how many organizations know what's not going right but still continue to do it because we have always been doing it that way. But the third most important question is, what did we learn in this last sprint that we're going to do something different, right? And so that allows us to start to challenge and find new things and keep adapting. Because what I learned is, you know, when people talk about innovation and creativity, it doesn't happen in offsites, annual offsites, or brainstorming workshops and all of that. It needs to happen very, very regularly and methodically, right? It may seem paradoxical, but the more methodical you are at trying to look for new perspectives, the better you are at that. And of course, with Nellery now, when I start to meet my co-founders who are neuroscientists and medical doctors, they were explaining to me the biological phenomenon of that, right? That the brain actually works in a very interesting way. If you keep thinking the same way and doing the same way, your neural pathways start to become hardened.
Okay.
Right? But if you're willing to try new experiences and new perspectives, it starts to become more malleable.
Okay.
And the term they use is neuroplasticity.
Okay.
Right? And so the more you're good at that, the more you become creative. Or in other words, you got to get through 9 bad ideas before the 10th great idea pops up.
Right.
But the first idea you cannot, like, I need the first idea to be perfectly planned before I launch it. And so that's the premise of saying we've got a nuclear bomb, the standard 12-month cycle or 3 to 5 year planning and move to a much faster cadence, 30 days. Mm. However, speed alone without any form of direction can be chaotic. And so 30 years becomes interesting as an alternative perspective. And 30 years here is not what other people call big, hairy, audacious goals. I hate that because what I see is people tend to focus on me goals. I want to be a $1 billion company. I want to be the number one in my segment. And that's not very useful, right? But if you, 30 years is a perspective where I no longer have constraints in my existing budgets and resources and all of that, right? But if you say, look, how am I going to make a positive difference to the world? And what would that look like, right? That starts to define the purpose, the why, right? And so a good example, you know, Tony had this great slogan, now everyone can fly, right? And it's powerful. But to make it real to the team, we had to dig it to one level, right? If we really wanted everyone to fly, what does that mean? Well, first, we've got to have more planes and fly to more destinations, right? Okay, so we've got to have that network scale and fleet scale. And if we want everyone to fly, you have to be the most affordable airline. But if you're just cheap and you're not reliable, no one's going to want to fly with you. So reliability becomes important. And lastly, it has to be convenient and easy to use. Mm-hmm. Now, these words are important because these words are not about us, but it's about the value we're creating for others, right? And so presence or scale and affordability and reliability and convenience then become your guiding principles. So when you go through every 30-day sprint and you try to see, okay, what new thing are we going to try? You're guided by, well, will that allow us to become better at affordability and reliability and convenience? Mm. Notice affordable is deliberately different from low cost,
right?
Because low cost is an internal metric, right? Mm. Your unit cost, but consumers don't care about your unit cost, right? So you got to frame the mind in terms of how affordable can we be? And that's where I said, well, that's interesting, right? So if we somehow change the paradigm from this annual plan to one where you go to the extremes of 30-day planning and 30-year visioning or purpose defining, then it becomes a different way of running an organization and building businesses.
I'm here with Azran Osman Rani from Naluri talking about his book, 30 Days and 30 Years. I'm Frida Liu, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Frida Liu here. I'm with Azran Osman Rani from Naluri talking about his latest book, 30 Days and 30 Years, where he describes the sprint and marathon of achieving breakthrough performance. You know, just earlier on, you were talking about the whole idea of 30 days and having that vision for 30 years. Do people think that way, 30 years? You know, I'm just thinking like when we first started working, right? Were we thinking 30 years and thinking about our contribution to the universe? So I guess when someone reads this book, are we talking about the individuals or are we talking about the organization that would benefit from reading this book?
Personally, I think it's both. You know, for example, when my friends and I kicked off iFlix, right? One of the very first things we said is, what do we really want to do? And we latched on the idea of, we want to redefine television for 1 billion people in emerging markets. Now, that's probably why over 100 initial investors rejected iFlix, because they probably thought, what pharmaceuticals are we on to think that a few guys in Mid Valley can serve 1 billion people, right? When the largest video streaming provider in the world was not even a tenth of that at that point. But to us, it's interesting because once you really think radically big, right, it starts to become very energizing and very empowering that it's not about solving things incrementally, because there's a tendency for us to keep thinking in 10% incremental improvements, right? But if we're really going to be different, especially for entrepreneurs, right? If you're just going to be marginally better than an existing product or service, it's not going to be exciting at all. You got to think, well, how can we be 10 times better as a judge or a rule? And to do that, you've got to kind of think of solutions that don't even exist today, right? So how would iFlix serve 1 billion people? We have no idea, right? Mm-hmm. But because you have your sights set there, you start to become more experimentative. When new pieces of technology come up, you're like, oh, this could be useful, this could be useful, right? So for example, to enable us to serve a billion people, especially in emerging markets, local language and culture becomes a lot more relevant, right? Because the English Western-centric model only serves the upper 20% of societies in emerging markets. But translation services and contextual translation is very laborious and time-consuming, right? But there are new AI tools that are coming out of it, which, by the way, is very, very different than, say, Google Translate, right? Because when it comes to television, it's not just the literal translations that matter, but it's the contextual translations, right? And so you start to keep an eye out for all these peripheral technologies that may not be core to your business, but you can see how it starts to apply to that. But if we're just thinking, okay, look, Malaysia market, how do we go from 500,000 subscribers to 700,000 subscribers? You're so focused on, okay, I must execute my marketing plan. I must execute this, this, this. You miss out on these game-changing opportunities, right? Because don't forget, before Facebook truly game-changed media, it was just a curiosity for college students to poke each other.
And Amazon, just looking at Amazon, where we thought it was just books. Look where it is now.
Exactly. And so if you want to be ahead of the curve, you've got to kind of know what happens on the periphery. And to know what happens on the periphery, what's relevant, you've got to think of that 30-year horizon.
Okay, now if we were to apply this 30 days and 30 years with you personally right now, what is it?
Well, you know, so for me, I'm really excited about new challenges, right? Take even Nalluri for now, right? We're not even a year since we launched the service on App Store and Google Play, and already we're thinking about different angles that this could change because we're learning stuff that we had no idea existed just a few months ago. And so if you ask me, you know, what's going to happen a year from now, I purposely don't want to know, right? I'm zealously focused on executing a 30-day plan because we want to make sure that we can create something. You don't want to be just pure big vision, but it's just so abstract. It doesn't deliver real stuff, right? But in the process of executing it, we're thinking, well, how could this apply if we want it to really change the world over the next 30 days, right? And then you start to get new ideas about angles and service lines. You know, one example is that suddenly, instead of just working with insurance companies and corporates who are concerned about their base, whether it's their policyholders or the employees who really need help with health, right? Suddenly, there are opportunities to also work with pharmaceutical companies. That may be counterintuitive because pharmaceutical companies really are selling drugs. But again, if you redefine the 30-year purpose of a pharmaceutical company, that your business is not drugs, but your business is health outcomes, improving health outcomes. Drugs may be the way you deliver that outcome today, but maybe in 30 years from now, that may not be the case. But if you only set your vision on 12 months, right, it's very hard to think about radical technologies. And interestingly, you know, so even, you know, some of the leading pharmaceutical companies in Malaysia now are saying, hey, you know, you're right, right? We've got to think five steps ahead. To be very cruel, for example, right? I mean, part of iFlix was disrupting existing broadcasters here, right? And you can see how they are being faced with this, you know, no longer, you know, some guys in Mid Valley, but it's a torrent of disruption hitting them right in their face. But their ability to change their business model away from set-top boxes and channels is hard because you've been so ingrained in that way. You're so focused on your quarterly results that you can't radically pivot, right? And yet we all know smartphones today have far more computing power than set-top boxes. Why do we even need set-top boxes that anchor us to one physical room when we should be able to have our entertainment with us anywhere we want, right? And why do we even need channels? The idea that someone's going to tell us that our TV show comes on at a particular day and time right. is actually obsolete. But they're still stuck in that paradigm, right? So that's the problem with having, you know, these time frames and budgets and plans. But the problem is, if you're not willing to disrupt yourself, unfortunately, there are crazy guys like Azran all around the corner who are going to come out of the woodwork.
You know, there are a lot of organizations, public listed companies that are, you know, held ransom by stakeholders and all that, right? And so I can't remember who said this term, quarterized. Mm-hmm. So we're always just measuring every, how do we change that when you're just measured every quarter on right. your results, right? And you know you have to do right. that. And then you're telling your company, we got to look at this from a five-year plan. Well, I need the results next quarter.
Yeah. That's why chapter four came in.
You got to buy the book.
That's right. Well, but basically, I thought the AirAsiaX experiment is a very, very good lesson in that issue, because the original idea would have been that long haul was just an extension of the existing AirAsia service, right? But the existing AirAsia board of shareholders felt, nope, too risky, unproven, we can't do it. Luckily, Tony at The Vision said, okay, well, number one, if they don't want to do it, we're going to create a separate company, X, right, to do it with a team that's 100% die-die, you must make it work. You can't go back to a safety net, right? And to bring in people from outside the industry who don't have that legacy, this is
baggage.
How things are doing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, who therefore, once you have an anchor of how things are doing, you start to think incrementally, oh, I'll just make it 10 to 20% better, right? And when it became completely separate with a completely separate team that had real skin in the game, it started to do things very, very different, which they wouldn't have been able to do if it became a department, right? So something, you know, you forget, but in 2007, you know, AirAsia and most of the low-cost airline industry still had practices like free seating. Why? Because that was the ingrained belief. Ryanair did it, EasyJet did it, Southwest Airlines did it, right? Tiger Air, AirAsia, and they wouldn't change, right? But because we became a separate company, we were willing to say, well, hang on, that's not the best customer experience, right?
I remember those days,
right?
No.
And so when we launched it, by the way, it took AirAsia 18 months before they realized, oh, you know what? Giving people an option where they sit, not only is a better customer experience, it generates more revenue, right, for people who do want to pay to sit on a particular seat. But it took them 18 months. So that's why sometimes you can be supposedly an innovative company, but when you're ingrained in your past successes, it becomes really hard to change. And that's why kind of these structures, and I think you're now starting to see corporate saying, you're right, innovation cannot just happen within departments. We need to take stakes in startups. You know, you need to create a broader ecosystem because that's where they can thrive without the constraints of the quarterized mentality.
Right. So you obviously do go out for speaking engagements and coaching sessions as well. How can people get hold of you?
Oh, azranosmanrani.com.
All right. And of course, and so they can just go to check out your website and people can buy the book either online or in major bookstores.
All MPH, Popular, W.H. Smith, all of them.
I think we can go on talking, you know, but I think people should buy the book. Thanks for being with us, Azran Osman Rani from Naluri, and also author of his new book, 30 Days and 30 Years. And if you missed any part of this interview, we have our app on the Apple App Store and on Google Play, and also website bfm.my/podcast, where you can listen to and download the podcast, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.